screen door. What's that secret you're keeping?
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door.
They sure do laugh a lot behind the green door. They sure do laugh a lot behind the green door. Larry Beeler here. We had to start with that little song. I've got a reason for that. We're talking music today, of course. It's an important part of people's lives and certainly is for our guest. Tom Wilmoth is in the studio with me today to talk about his book, Soundbites, A Lifetime of Listening. It was a really fun read. He's been a collector of popular music since he was a kid. Currently a professor of English at Concordia University in Mequon. What's your favorite song or album and why? We'd like to hear from you. I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Tom Wilmoth, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Now, I played the Green Door to start, and there's a reason, because it was an inspiration for you way back when you were just a youngster.
It really was. My mother would go to a friend's house for coffee, and she would send me to the bedroom of a son that lived over there. I would sit in that bedroom and just play that record over and over. Even now, that sounds great, that piano in there. And it's still a great tune, Jim Lowe.
Well, I tell you what, I like music, but I am no expert on music. I like to hear it and listen to it. But you're really passionate about it.
I am. I love it. It's it just came again. That is like pre-kindergarten days as far as listening to the Green Door, and I've always loved it. And I would listen to the radio at my parents' house and my father's big band records, Glenn Miller. And then all of a sudden, in early 1964, the Beatles showed up, and I was ready. But yes, I've always loved music.
Well, and your book, oh my goodness, it's a collection of, I'm looking, Louis Armstrong, Hank Williams, Rolling Stones, Miles Davis, Chuck Berry, Tom Waits, Stevie Wonder, Elton John, The Beatles, Bob Dylan, and a whole lot more.
That's right. I break it down into four sections, and I try to get those names on the cover just because I do like a wide variety of material. Yeah. And I think that kind of says that I love Hank Williams, but I love Miles Davis, and like I said, I love the Beatles and Bob Dylan. And somebody said a long time ago, there's two types of music, good music and bad music. And it's all of this genre-crossing material. There's a wide, wide variety of great music out there.
You know what? I'm going to bring Duane from Wausau in right away here because he's got a question. Duane, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom and Larry. Yeah, I'm kind of in that guy's wheelhouse, too. I'm 56 and went through all my stages of different kinds of music. I liked over the years classic rock, Neil Young, and you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash. But, you know, you like it all, bluegrass, Zydeco, reggae, a little bit of that can go a long way. But there's a band that we heard at the end of a movie a while back called Lord Huron, and I never really got into this kind of this indie sound, but it's, they're out of Presque Isle, Michigan and San Francisco, but the name of the CD is called Lonesome Dreams, and a lot of the songs reference like the Great Lakes or Earth, you know, the desert, the moon, and their stories about a man and a woman and how he's, you know, going after her and hope she'll be part of his journey. A lot of songs about journeys in life, but if you've never heard it, it's worth a listen, you know. And
I appreciate the tip, you know, that your question came up on the screen here, and I thought, Lord Huron, that rang a minor bell, but I could say nothing about them, but I appreciate that tip. I'll look into them.
Yeah, they got a great sound, and just it's really hard not to just listen to the whole CD, and every song's great. But the CD was Lonesome Dreams.
Lonesome Dreams.
Hope you get to listen to it.
I absolutely will search that out. You know, I think that's what's important as far as keep listening and keep going to concerts. And there's just so much new stuff out there. And between the new material and diving into the past to find out influences, it's it can be overwhelming, but it's a great thing to be overwhelmed by.
The holiday, too, is good. All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling, Dwayne. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in, too. Do you have a favorite Group, what's the favorite concert? What's the best concert you ever went to? I've been to a lot of concerts, and I have some favorites. Who's your favorite performer and why? What's the first record you ever bought? What does music mean to you? Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Do you know how many concerts you've been to, Tom?
Several hundred, I guess. I mean, I know there are some people that, I mean, it becomes a contest or whatever, and at least several hundred. You go through kind of a slump, I went through kind of a slump when you're getting the family going and get the job going, and all of a sudden the nights are taken up with a lot of other material. But now the kids are grown, and actually I'm going to more concerts in the last several years than I did for a while. So it's and so many more musicians are back out on the road now because the revenue stream has dried up for albums and CDs. And, I mean, I think part of the reason there are so many bands out there is because they need the money from the road again.
That's really interesting because their money from albums is gone.
It's pretty much gone, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what makes, in your mind, what makes a great concert?
Great concert. It's a tough one to come across. When everything is clicking on 8, it's wonderful, but you've got to have a band that's into it, and the sound has to be good. You've got to have an audience that's paying attention. I mean, you know, everybody's had the experience where you're sitting by the wrong person, and they're making noise, or they're... Mm-hmm. So there's so many variables that go into it, but again, a band working hard on a good night and a good venue, good sound... there's nothing like it. I like sitting in the basement listening to records. I like my live albums. But as far as the concert experience, there's really nothing like it when things are working.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I went to one concert where the lead singer was bombed and couldn't remember even his own words from, and the guitarist next to him was giving him the words to sing.
That's frustrating, and you're cheating your audience, and it's that's unfair to the audience, certainly.
Oh, well, so you write about, and a lot of these pieces, I love, you have so much enthusiasm in your writing, and
thank
it's such
you.
A nice style, and it really got me thinking about many of the concerts that I went to. And it was fun to read about the various musicians, many of whom I think you've met and had some great experiences with.
I was able to, back in the day, especially in college and right after college, I didn't have a lot going on, so I had a huge amount of time, so I could kind of stick around and, you know, get backstage and talk to people or try to set up interviews. And things went well. On the jazz front, Gary Burton, vibes player, nice guy, several... rock and roll people. Tom Waits was a kind of an important person that I felt so a wide variety of people. And then I kind of pursued that again. I've talked, I had a lengthy telephone interview with Dave Brubeck shortly before his death. And so I have had Don Everly of the Everly Brothers, Charlie Louvin, deep into country. I have had the opportunity to speak with a variety of people. I've been fortunate.
Here's one guy that you...
That lonesome whippoorwill, he sounds too blue to fly. That midnight train is wide and low. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
We may have to stop and start drinking now. That song is written by Hank Williams, and when that came out, that was like the flip side of one of his singles, and that was very much of an ignored song at the time. And of course, now that's one of Hank's signature tunes.
And Glenn Campbell singing there.
And Glenn, you know, people... He had a great voice, and he was just such a stellar guitar player. He kind of fell off the map for 10 or 20 years after his Good Time Hour, and people kind of forgot about it. But by golly, he went back on the road, and my lovely wife, Ellie, who is sitting right here, she said, "You want to see Glenn Campbell?" And I said, "Well," and I said, I wasn't thrilled, but we went, and he just... his solo on Galveston, I'd put up against Eric Clapton. I mean, and, you know, he was a studio player. I was able to talk to Glenn Campbell a little bit as far as his studio work, and he was just wonderful. A very nice guy. This was before he got sick. Nice guy, and his guitar playing, the cleanliness Glenn Campbell could get off of a 12-string guitar was just remarkable.
And he's, you had him sign one of your... Yeah, that was a great story. I love that story. You picked a...
It was a lesser-known album called I Remember Hank Williams.
Yeah.
So it comes full circle here. And Elliot arranged for me to go see Glenn Campbell with my friend Pete. And so we were going to see him, and we got into the casino, and Pete says, "Hey, there's Glenn by the elevators." Oh, okay. And so I go hoofing over there, and I've got the album in a bag, and I'm starting to take the album out, and Glenn Campbell looks at it and says, "Oh," and he signs it, and it's not an album that he sees every night, and he's very pleasant, and he goes up in the elevator, and then the two big security guards say, "Yeah, we were just about half a second from dropping you. We didn't know what you were pulling out of that bag." But it was very pleasant. And then that night during the concert, he played four or five older country songs that I don't think were in his regular set, and I think he was influenced by seeing that album that night. And again, a great performer, great guitar player.
He's like Uncle Boo, he said.
Uncle Boo, yeah. He looked at it and said, "Oh, Uncle Boo." And there's a shot of him on the cover. Glenn is a very young, you know, 9 or 10, and he's playing guitar, and Uncle Boo is standing there playing with him, and he's got the cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And the whole album, again, it's a lesser known one. It's on Capitol, but it's a lesser known album, no hits. But that whole album cover is filled with photos kind of from Glenn Campbell's background, and he clearly was touched at seeing that album that night.
It was a nice little piece you had there. Kurt in Cottage Grove, your turn. Thanks, Kurt, for calling.
Yeah, hi, there's Eric Koskinen, and he's a local guy that's playing, and he's got bars, and he's got that radio show. He's just pretty unbelievable. You should just check it out. And he's got his own little kind of country twang and kind of bluesy and everything like that. And he's got a great band to back him up. So he's a singer-songwriter. I think he produces here. He has his own studio and stuff. But I think he produced Chastity Brown. And he, whenever you see him, he's usually with a band from out of state that is really good. So he's definitely worth
a listen. Yeah, well,
absolutely. Thanks. Yeah. Eric Costinson. Okay.
Check him out on his website. He's got tour dates, but he's a local guy. I think everybody would enjoy his music.
Good.
All right.
Thanks for the shout out.
Thanks for the shout out, Kurt. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Tom Wilmoth today about music and about his book, a fascinating, fun book. It's called Soundbites, A Lifetime of Listening, talking about some of the great performers that you and I have heard over the years and really have enjoyed, and he's got some great stories to tell as well. Jill Nadeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45, we'll talk with another author. This is a totally different story about how dogs use their noses and their sense of smell and what you and I can do to improve our own sense of smell. So stay with us for that. Right now, we're not talking about the nose. We're talking about the ears and hearing and listening to some great music with Tom Wilmoth, author of Soundbites, A Lifetime of Listening. And Daniel in Minong has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Daniel. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Today is the birthday of Charles Edwardson. Do you know by what name we commonly refer to Charles Edward Anderson?
You know, I saw him once. You go ahead and say his name for us. Chuck Berry, right?
Yeah, right, Chuck Berry. Yeah.
But I might have had a little help on that one. But no, 90 years old, Chuck Berry. I was able to see him back in 1971 at the Des Moines, Iowa Ice Arena, and he was coming off of his then hit "My Ding-a-Ling," and he was back on the road pushing things hard. And I'd never seen him, and it was a great show. And he was running late, and I was a high school student at the time, but he put on a very, very good show, and you would have stumped me on that. I want to make sure you know that. You would have stumped me. But happy birthday, Chuck Berry, and I'm so glad that I got to see Chuck Berry back in 1971.
Oh, man. Kathy in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Hi, how you guys doing?
Great. Good. Appreciate the call. What have you got for us today?
I had just a comment of my first concert, and the concerts that I've mostly gone to and participated have been the Grateful Dead. Saw them in the early 80s before they got super popular, and actually was lucky enough to see the last show at Soldiers Field. And my comment would be that so many groups they've done so many covers themselves, and they've also had so many bands that have kind of veered off from them but stayed similar, like, say, Tea Leaf Green or String Cheese Incident. And now a lot of those bands are starting to head over to the concerts that my son now is 25 and he's going to, like E-Forest in Michigan, for example. But, you know, and nobody ever forgot the words better than Jerry Garcia, ever. He's the best at forgetting the words and holding it together, and he just gets my respect so much for that. But, you know, the way the crowd, the symbiosis between the crowd and the band was just the most magical thing I had ever experienced.
I agree with that so much. There's nothing like, excuse me, there's nothing like a Grateful Dead concert as far as interaction between the audience and the performers. The closest I ever came to the vibe that I got when I saw the actual Grateful Dead was I was down in Texas and I saw Willie Nelson at a large bar in Texas, and that kind of reminded me of a Grateful Dead show, just because exactly what you're saying as far as the connection between the performer and the audience, and I think the room smelled the same that night too, as I recall.
There you go. Kathy, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's get another little piece of music in here. Listen to, let me get this up.
I ain't got no mama now. I ain't got no mama now.
Ah, there's a recording from 1927.
Deep blues, you know, deep blues are some of the, again, so many things coming out of the book are based on deep blues, whether it's Stevie Ray Vaughan or Eric Clapton. Jimmy Rogers, in his own way, was a blues singer. I was fortunate enough when I was in Texas to see some blues. Bobby Blue Bland comes to mind as far as just a great, great show. My friend Tony Davidson and I went down, and we parked in a mud lot, and it was a corrugated tin building, and there was Bobby putting on a fine, low-keyed, but very, very powerful show.
And there was Blind Lemon Jefferson singing right there.
Right. And that's, again, tremendously influential. And I live in Grafton, Wisconsin right now. And Grafton is very, very proud of its blues background. We have the festival every year over there, the Paramount Blues Festival, and very respectful because of the Paramount Records that were recorded there. Well, Jack White has made a huge deal of that lately. He wouldn't come to Grafton, Wisconsin, of course, but he made a big deal out of the Paramount label. So we thank him for that.
Oh, and you have some pieces on the Paramount label. I want to go to Bill first in Prairie du Sac. Then we'll maybe go back to Paramount for a minute.
Sure,
Bill.
Wonder if you're familiar with a group of people sticking Elvis Presley in a major symphony band and blending them. And at first glance, it sounds ridiculous, but it's got to be great, and I don't know where I can find it.
Well, those are commercially available. The second of those volumes just came out. I forget the names of them, but I have fairly strong feelings about messing with original recordings and putting strings on them. They did that with Hank Williams back in the day, and bottom line, it's RCA trying to sell some more records for Elvis, and I love Elvis, and I just don't think that, if it sounds great to you, great, but I just don't think Elvis needs to have strings added to him. I say in the book, I comment on that, the first of those releases in the Soundbites book, I say, I forget the person from Rolling Stone says it's done with taste and care. I said, I call it misguided. but you know, if it's going to help, if Priscilla says, well, it's going to expand it to new audiences. I okay, put what, you know, dress it up however you want, but they want to sell some more records, and that's why they're in business, of course. But I think the King, as he recorded those records, those recordings stand up just fine. But those are commercially available now.
There we go. Thanks, Bill. Judy in Lodi, your turn. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, there was a group back in the 50s. I was vice president of the club. They were called the Crew Cuts.
Shaboom.
Yeah, Earth Angel. And all of a sudden, they just kind of faded out. And
well,
my cousin...
The Shaboom was a big hit by the Chords, but the Chords was a black group, and so white radio wouldn't play them. So the Crew Cuts recut that tune, and they had the big kind of the Letterman kind of harmony with it. And it's a fine tune, as you know. If you were involved with them, it sounds fine. But the Chords had the real song with that. As far as what happened to the Crew Cuts, boy, I couldn't name anything else by them after Shaboom, but it was a big hit for them back in about 56.
Yeah, I think a nice, it was a nice song. It was fun to listen to. Fun
absolutely. We could sing it later.
I think I can sing
could
that
be
one
a dream.
Too. Oh, if you could take me up in paradise,
oh, yeah.
Up above.
That's great. Sure,
there we go. Let's go to Dennis in Appleton. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I grew up as a teenager in the mid '60s, and that the mid '60s to late '70s was such a great era.
Yes.
For music. You had the British Invasion, Motown, and it just. I still have hundreds of albums that I still play. And you also mentioned Glenn Campbell. He was part of the wrecking crew of the session musicians in Hollywood.
He sure was. And the wrecking crew, tremendously important as far as, again, they were the A-list of Los Angeles studio players. And there are a couple of books out on that. I think one is just called The Wrecking Crew, and I know there's a film of it too. But the book... I like the book on the Wrecking Crew. The author seems to take delight in indicating to you that, yeah, many of your favorite records from that era have the Wrecking Crew backing them up instead of the actual band. But it's the Wrecking Crew were without peer. And, of course, at that time you have a band in the studio and time is money and you want to get it done in one or two takes. But the Wrecking Crew were studio musicians that played behind many, many of the hits that made it onto the radio. And if you... if you take a look, you know, Glenn Campbell, Hal Blaine, so many of the people from there are just A1, just without peer as far as musicians. You know, one sidebar on that is it's fortunate that the Beatles emerged where they did, because the Beatles, on Beatle records, those are the Beatles. If they would have emerged in Los Angeles, Beatle records might have had the Wrecking Crew behind them, and God bless the Wrecking Crew. But on Beatles albums, that's the Beatles playing those instruments, and that was true over in England, not often true here.
Yeah,
I know. People would be surprised at how many records they played on. Like you said, in the original group,
huge
did
number,
not play.
And that takes nothing away from anybody, but a huge number.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dennis, for calling. I want to go back before I forget to Paramount, because
sure.
That's a Wisconsin. That
right.
was a Wisconsin label.
The Paramount label in Port Washington and Grafton, and it was put together by a furniture company, and they pressed, even at the time, they were considered lo-fi 78 recordings. And so, but they're sought after by collectors in a big way. And I talk about one of the books, Do Not Sell at Any Price is the name of the book, and she talks about the Grafton. And there's another one that is... specifically devoted, that I review that book also, specifically devoted to the Paramount label. Vandertook is the name of that author, and he's very, very diligent. And Grafton, even since I moved there 25 years ago, it's become very proud of that heritage and that background. An interesting kind of a small, unusual place for this to emerge, but it did.
It did indeed. Emily in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Emily. Thanks for calling. I'm sorry,
Sandy.
I'm reading the wrong line, Sandy. I'm sorry.
That's no problem. Good morning, Larry and guest. I'm calling because my husband is a drummer in a band called the Doo-Wop Daddies. And this is a genre that just doesn't seem to be that popular now, but you would not know it. If you came out to one of their performances, the dance floor is packed from the first downbeat, and the best part of being there at so many of these gigs is to see the people coming out and dancing and laughing and loving and the happiness on their face. The previous caller, a couple of callers ago, mentioned Shaboom. Well, that is on the set list, so that gives you a sense of the music that they play. And actually, Saturday night, after a gig during one of the breaks, a fellow came up to me, and he had tears in his eyes, and he said, "This music brings back so many memories of some of the happiest times in my life."
Doo-wop really runs deep as far as that whole. It's a real genre unto itself, and boy, the vocal harmony and the intricacies. Well, if Brian Wilson were sitting here, he would, I know, rave about doo-wop bands, and I don't know if the Four Freshmen are really truly considered a doo-wop band, but again, these intricate vocal harmonies that influenced the Beach Boys, and my friend Brian Karthauser is so much interested in this. Again, that leads into taking something that you like and then kind of working backwards, whether it's where did the Beach Boys get their harmonies, or who influenced who. It's a world in unto itself, absolutely. And doo-wop is, I agree with you, doo-wop is overlooked. It absolutely is a very valid genre and wonderful, wonderful music.
Now, thank you, Sandy. Steve and Lowell, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've discovered YouTube to be just a wonderful resource for music anywhere from the late teens, as in 1918, that sort of thing, up until, of course, now. And it's great to go in and discover stuff that certain genres, things that never get airplay. Like, if you think of big bands, right away, you know, Miller and Dorsey and all those people come up. But some other people out there, too. And there's some nursing homes have a program called Music and Memory, I believe.
Oh, yes. My mother had severe Alzheimer's, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I took my laptop over to there last time I visited my mom, who is in a nursing home, and, you know, she's with it pretty much. But there's really nothing to talk about. We're out of chit-chat, so I threw YouTube up there on the laptop, and we just watched just wonderful musical cuts, you know, from musical movies and whatnot, and music in and of itself. And I look over, and she's smiling, and she's...
Yep. Smiling and nodding, and even though you can't communicate on one level, you can communicate.
Yes.
You can. I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you.
So that's all I wanted to bring up. And my first record was Deep Purple.
Oh, which one?
River Deep Mountain High.
Oh yeah, that's that's on the Tetragrammophone label. That's a great record, Shades of Deep Purple. If I were going to own one album by Deep Purple, that'd be the album.
Steve, thanks a lot.
Thank you for the show. Dave.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Judy in Iola, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and guest. I have a story to share with everybody. My husband and I went to a Rolling Stones concert back in the early 80s, and we were living in Florida. And they happened to stay, like the whole entourage happened to stay over at the Ritz-Carlton that was only about a mile from our house. And, you know, they had their little parties going at night and blues music playing on their little recorder. And the next day I just said, you know, I got this poster. I'm going to get on my bicycle, go down to the beach, and see if any of them are out there and see if I can get an autograph from my husband, because he loves the Stones. So I went down there, and I was so nervous. And I got on my bike, and I went down to the beach, and I went up to Keith Richards. He was sitting there on a chair, and I introduced myself. And he autographed this poster for my husband. And then he just took my hand, and he says, glad to have met you. And he asked me my name. And then I walked away, and, you know, I said to this one girl, I says, would you like to hold my hand? Keith Richards just held my hand. And that is something I always remember. And I have this poster that's autographed to my husband from Keith Richards, and it's been hanging on our walls since early, you know, like the mid-80s.
I think that's a great story, and you've got a tangible, not only your handhold, but you've got a poster. And you know that a lot, so many musicians, if you can get to them, not everybody's a nice person, of course, but what I found is if you can get to some of these people, they are often really nice. This is one of my kind of what I call hanging with the stars in the book, but I was working the Iowa State Fair, and this huge limo came cruising in, and I was at the main gate, and I thought, Elton John is playing the main stage tonight. I bet he's in that limo. and the limo stopped. I didn't think it would. And I stuck my head in, and there was Elton John in the back seat. And I said, hey, Elton, I saw you in Ames, Iowa several years ago. I loved the show. And he was very, he goes, oh, yeah, okay. I mean, very nice. I mean, it was just, he didn't have to be. He could have told me to get lost or whatever. But not always, but I found that oftentimes if you can actually get to some of these people and you're not really bugging them, they can be very, very nice.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you so much, Judy. Here's a guy who's kind of nice.
You know, we talked about the Grateful Dead, and there's nothing like a Grateful Dead show. There's nothing like a Bruce Springsteen concert.
I've seen six.
Yeah, that, and again, you must like them to go back. And there's a certain amount of vitality and energy, and it's just a remarkable evening. Absolutely.
And I kind of played that right now because does seem to be. I know people who have met him. I have not met him myself, but he was very pleasant,
good,
and very nice to one friend at least who had a chance to meet and talk with him.
That's always nice to hear, just because you want them to be and
you were a huge fan of his at first.
Oh, yeah, I went to my first Bruce Springsteen concert against my will. I was living in St. Paul, and this was 1980, and my friend said, hey, Bruce is going back on the road, get us tickets. And I thought, you know, all Bruce doing is the 1966 Dylan thing. And so I was wrong, by the way. And so we went to see Bruce Springsteen. It was the very early in the River Tour, October of 1980. And I just had the doors knocked off me. I was just taken.
He plays for hours.
At the end of the first set, I thought it was the night, and then he leans into the mic and says, we'll be back for a second set. And I thought, wow. I was just blown away. And after that, I started making all my friends crazy and collecting the bootlegs, and I became and remain a huge Bruce Springsteen fan.
Lori in Cedarburg has something for us. Hi, Lori.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Larry. How are you this morning?
Wonderful. Thank you.
I had to laugh because Steve, an earlier caller, said his first album was Deep Purple. That was the first concert I ever went to. My question, though, is regarding John Prine. And I wondered, Tom, if you had reviewed John Prine on one or more occasions, and if there's anything in your book regarding him.
You know, John Prine is somebody that I saw at the Milwaukee Theater several years ago, probably 10 years ago, and I really enjoyed that show very much. He also played a very, very generous set, and he had a really hot guitar player with him. I appreciated the fact that he played the songs that you wanted to hear, even though he plays that every night of his life, but he's out there doing the all of the material from the first album, or a great deal of it anyway. There's very little John Prine in the book itself, no specific reviews, but I hold John Prine in high regard, and I really enjoyed the concert that I saw. And again, a unique talent. He writes tunes that are really like no one else's. He looks at the world through a different perspective. I picked up some of those outtakes and some of those demos from his very, very early days that he recorded at a radio station in Chicago, and I really enjoy the early stuff a lot, and I've stayed with him as well. But I know he's coming back to town fairly soon, Milwaukee anyway. I know he's on the road, I'll say that. So, yeah, wonderful performer.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, Lori. Appreciate the call. David in Wausau, hello to you.
Hey, what a great show. Larry and Tom, thank you. I'm a 63-year-old active drummer. I play in multiple genres. I've had the honor to play with many awesome lead vocalists and lead instrumental instrument players. And I grew up with Count Basie. My mother had Count Basie and Ella and Tex-Mex, and she let us turn whatever we discovered up loud on the stereo as kids. And I'll be eternally grateful to her for that. But the thing that I love doing now is discovering somebody who blows your mind, who was already on the scene, but takes a radical departure. And I'm not going to tell you this individual's name, my latest discovery, until the end of this short story. But somebody who just does something totally out of the path they've been on for their career. And this woman recently did a album of covers, and she covers the tune Lilac Wine. Tom, you may already have guessed who it is. If you haven't...
I'm going to let you tell us. I don't have it.
It's Miley Cyrus.
Oh! Ah. Okay. You know what? That woman can sing. And I hope people aren't shutting off the radio now. I've seen her on Saturday Night Live, and my wife and I are sitting there watching and think, by golly, she's got pipes. And I saw her on Letterman near the end of his run, and I didn't care much for the tune that she was doing, but that woman can sing. That's interesting. No, I was unaware of that. I think if she handles herself right, she can hang in the business for a while, because I think she's got the... I think she's got the raw material to be a singer, no doubt about it.
And I think you write about others who made sort of a change in how they approach their music in your book.
Right. There's a lot of people that take really hard left or right turns. Somebody as big as Bob Dylan jumps to mind, whether it's Turning Electric, but far more recently, like when he went hard, very hard into Christianity in 1979, and even more recently when he's been doing the Frank Sinatra cover set, or close to it. His last few shows have not been that, but Dylan is one that takes hard turns. Bruce Springsteen, he comes out and does an acoustic solo show.
Yeah.
Who would have thought it? And again, that can be a little
bit... It was a wonderful show.
Those are...
I saw it.
wonderful stuff. So you've got people, and I think that's what an artist... That's what a true artist will do, is not necessarily play it safe and try different things, and they won't all work. I talked to jazz saxophonist Eddie Harris, and he said, I try all sorts of different things because that's what a musician should do. He said, some of them didn't work. He said, some of them I don't like now. But he said, I didn't know I didn't like it till I tried it. So it's interesting stuff.
And Dylan, just Nobel Prize for Literature.
Absolutely.
If they can find him.
If they can find
to give him the prize. They're trying to get a hold of him, and they can't reach him. Call him. Well, Tom, I hope your book does well. It is so much fun.
Thank you.
And how do we get it?
It's on Amazon. I have a website, muleshoepress.com. It's one word, muleshoe, M-U-L-E-S-H-O-E, muleshoepress.com, or it's on Amazon. Very easy to find. It's available hardback, paperback, and a Kindle edition as well.
Well, I hope you'll come back and be with us again. It was a lot of fun.
Love to.
It was fun. Tom Wilmoth, our guest, passionate collector of music, author of Sound Bites, A Lifetime of Listening, currently professor of English at Concordia University in Mequon. Great to have him with us, and speaking of Bob Dylan, let's go out with a little Bob Dylan.
Darkness at the break of noon, shadows even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon, to understand you know too soon, there's no sense in trying. As pointed threats they bluff with scorn, suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece, the hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying. Temptation's page flies out the door.
Oh, that was fun, wasn't it? It was a lot of fun, and we'll have Tom back, and we'll talk music again with him. It was really a good time, and I know we're going to have a good time with our next guest, changing topics entirely, but with another author. We're going to talk with the author of Being a Dog, Following the Dog into a World of Smell. You're not going to believe all the things that we learn about dogs and how they smell and what they smell. Alexandra Horowitz, our guest, coming up on the Ideas Network.